Welcome, ladies and one gentleman. I've changed my mind again. Not really, totally, but a little bit. Can you read what's up there?
Fund number one.
Yeah. Here's where I, let me try to give you what I've, I wonder if I turn off that light.
That would help a lot.
No.
All three of them.
That's the best.
That's better. Yeah.
This is just sort of modified what I said last time. But I'm just trying to get an overview of the whole thing so that we don't get lost in all the particulars. I think that's one of the frustrating things about this section. So, you know, we did the spirit matter bit, and then we had Izdahar, and then Izdahar gets put into an egg, and then he's reborn. You would think that the story would change, but it really hasn't, because we got all these talks, all these statements. I wrote some of them down just for the heck of it. I love and admire the powerful, and on the one hand, and on the other hand, I'm lamed. And
whose statements are those? Izdahar's?
These are Jung's.
Oh, Jung's.
He's lame, and yet later in that page he says, "I felled the great one." He talks as if he were the sun. Then he says, "I caught the sun." So we get all of these conflicting statements, and I've tried to summarize the four themes which are conflicting around the sun, around, I didn't quite know how to put it, the ego or power, around evil, and about God. Does he create God? Does he serve God? We get a little bit of everything.
What does that last say?
The last line.
Serve or create God.
Okay.
Oh, it does say. That's, sorry. It does say. It does say.
Slay.
Slay or create God. See, here he's killing God, and here he's almost becoming God. So all of these contain conflicts. His statements about the sun, his statement about power, his statement about evil. He's saying, oh, evil is basically saying evil is important. Then he says, oops, my soul is possessed by evil. And then sometimes it talks about killing God, other times it talks about creating God. This is a massive confusion. That's an alchemical term. And you've got to remember how he is doing this. He's just listening to what's coming up from within. So he's not trying to put a consistent message out. He's just trying to put out what he's hearing. And that is the nature of the unconscious psyche. It is a mixture of contradictions. Now, most of us have, if we're functioning in the world, are sort of separated from this. If you ever talk to somebody who's crazy, this is the way they talk. It's one thing, one thing, one thing, one thing, one thing. You know, you can't ever have a conversation because as soon as you pin it down, they're off into the opposite. You point out the contradiction, and they're off onto something else. Now, that is a pair of opposites. We're going to have to be about synthesizing them, just like we were about synthesizing Elijah and Solomon. But here's where the plot thickens. What is going to synthesize them is not, this is my current attempt to understand it anyway, is not something between these two. It's going to be the presentation of yet another conflict. So what we're going to have is conflict fighting conflict. There's a conflict within these two, and we're going to see, soon he starts talking about Christianity, sometimes as a beautiful thing, and sometimes as an abhorrent thing. So a conflict of two turns into a conflict of four. But each side of the conflict will work on the other side of the conflict to produce a synthesis. So before we had a conflict of two being resolved within itself, here we have a conflict of two a conflict of two attacking each other and then being resolved in a bit like we did before, in a third or a fifth thing, we're going to see crucifixion, which will be the death of these two. We're going to see death, which is the death of these two. We're going to see something we really haven't heard before. It is the lowest among men, the beginning of humility. We don't have any humility here whatsoever. This is totally arrogant. And we're going to have a tree. See, that's the resolution of the fork. I should have brought you a picture. I didn't think of it. But if you can remember any of those alchemical pictures where there are trees and then bulbs on each side, so that the tree contains and synthesizes those polarities and then grows up between them.
What does it say on the right there up top? Is that
Christianity. And sometimes he talks about it as positive, and sometimes he talks about it as negative.
So, and could you read those ones at the bottom? Right?
Yeah, crucifixion.
Okay.
These are just the names or the themes of the chapters that follow.
These are the new themes that are going to come along.
Yeah, well, and they're also the names of the chapters that follow.
Oh, okay.
Or the themes of the chapters that follow. Crucifixion, death, which of course is chapter hell. Your dead is hell. The lowest, the tree, and then something new, good and evil linked together and modulating each other. Here you have one or the other. Here you have the two linked in some sort of reciprocal connection. Why this has been so confusing is we've had all of this stuff presented with absolutely no logic behind it. And your head is spinning, but that's the nature of the unconscious, and you cannot understand it rationally. Part of the art of working with material is just throwing reason out the door. And you say, oh, we have this and this, it's a conflict. Okay, we have this and this, it's a conflict. Okay, we have this and this, it's a conflict. Okay. Now, if you were talking to somebody, you'd say, oh, God damn it, what do you mean? So that's a natural reaction to want to bring clarity, but that is forcing a synthesis, and what Jung is discovering is if you honor the complexity, it starts synthesizing itself. That's the transcendent function. Okay, that's where I think I am now. Originally, I put Christianity over here as a singularity, fighting this side, but the more I thought about it, I thought, no, this is a pair of opposites, and this is a pair of opposites. And those of you who have done psychology of the transference will remember these pictures. And I'm thinking this is where Jung got these ideas from this stuff, that a conflict of two is a conflict of four. There. And then what is going to resolve that is the Holy Spirit. So it is not an act of will, it's an act of the Spirit that is going to produce the synthesis.
So the Holy Spirit would be the transcendent function.
Holy Spirit would be the transcendent function, yeah.
What I think is so courageous, that he goes into all this stuff. He doesn't know what's going to come out of it. We now know. We can say to people, well, stay with this confusion. Honor the various feelings and emotions and thoughts you're having. Don't kill one side for the other. And the person will be, I'm going crazy. Well, you're not going crazy. You're almost going crazy. But what will happen then, the psyche will come in and start giving you a bigger picture. We know that now. Jung didn't know that, but he did this anyway. So I think that's an enormous accomplishment. So we're just about finished with the left side. And for another chapter or two, he's going to start talking about Christianity. and we'll see. It may help you to understand what we're coming up against now is another pole. And that pole is got two poles within itself. And when we get all four on the board, they're going to start producing a synthesis. So before we had a conflict of two, that was bad enough, but we could kind of follow that. Now we have a conflict of four, which is not two times more difficult, but exponentially more difficult. And more dangerous for the person going through them. So that's a general overview. What we did last... that's interesting. What we did last time was we finished the left side, we finished the chapter on evil, and then we went to the chapter on sacrifice. We got an allusion to the next pole of Christianity when he talks about the girl, and the word he uses, who is an image of God's formation. In other words, the girl is what God has formed. That's on top of 291. The sacrifice has been accomplished. The divine child, the image of the God's formation, is slain. Now, so that introduces the religious theme. I freely admit this is my personal interpretation. Somebody else might look at it differently. But what I get out of that is because it's an image of God's formation, it's an image of what God has formed in the world, which is a huge piece of damage to the soul. So what Jung is seeing is the destructive effect of the current state of the God image. Think of abused altar boys. That's this wounded girl is their soul. And a God image that leaves no room for nature has to produce damage in the sphere of nature.
Could it be what happens when the soul only lets the spiritual side of itself?
Yeah. But that's the worldview that Christendom has presented. You know, I've said it before, but I think it's one of the most brilliant critiques of Christianity I've ever heard of. What would Christianity be like if Jesus Christ had four kids to put through college? It is utterly unrelated to the struggles we have with matter, mortgages, children, sexuality. None of that is addressed. Now, at times you'll see he's going to throw Christianity out. But then he says, no, we can't throw it out. So this, I think, is the beginning of what we now call transformation of the God image. He's seeing the inadequacy of it. He's tempted to get rid of it, but he can't. So the other pole is going to come up. We're looking at the positive and negative side of Christianity. And then he will reinterpret it to maintain its essence, but not fall under its errors. And then we ended up looking at these pictures, which just about drove me mad. So that's sort of where we are. And let's try to attack these pictures. See what we can get out of it. Um, The footnotes were utterly confusing. And I heard you talking, so I think maybe you figured something out, that they're not just referring to a particular picture, but they're referring to pictures coming up. Let's keep that in mind. But first of all, I think they are footnoted wrong. I think I mentioned that last time. Image 94 should be footnote 156. And image 95 should be footnote 157. And footnotes go over the next page. I'm not going to worry about those footnotes unless somebody is determined to probe them. What I will allude to, and then let's look at the pictures and see where we go with it, is when I get confused like this, I just try to look for one thing that makes sense. And the thing that makes sense is where he says he's going to capture the sun. That's on, where is that? I think it's footnote 155. To place it in the small prison. 2, 4, 6 lines down. See where I am? Footnote 155, 6 lines down. He's talking about the sun. Therefore, one must reach down, meanwhile, the upper sun comes out of the cone, and the cone gazes after it, dejected about where it's going. One has to retrieve it with a hook and would like to place it in the small prison. See how that begins to try to get under control everything we just put up there on the left. The sun was this great thing. He loved the powerful, and he was going to create God, and God has a solar aspect. And all of a sudden he's saying, no, wait a minute, let's try to contain it. So he is attempting, I think, at this point, to begin to wrestle with the relativity of what he had just expressed as literally, as a bunch of literal truths. He's beginning to see, well, we have to relativize this. In other words, interpret it. Now, there is a sense where we create God. But he later interprets that to mean where we find the pattern of ourself, and then we try to make that real in time and space. That's much different than thinking, I create God. So, let's see. I think that's where we left off.
Clear up at 89?
Yeah, didn't we? Does that sound right? Yeah.
Well, I have a comment on 85.
Okay.
That we didn't name.
Okay.
That fish up there.
Yeah.
Perhaps that's his contemplation of the imitation of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 86, that gold of the fish surrounds that star. So okay. It's like he's taken that spiritual essence,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is very much a grail theme.
Mm-hmm.
He's taken that spiritual essence of Christ and surrounded his own. I guess that, I'm thinking that that upper star is his star, mm-hmm. and the star in the mandala is the star of the self. And those two stars are going to come together.
Yeah, or maybe this is all that stuff on the left-hand side. All this uprush from the earth might be all the stuff that's come up about the sun, the power, the evil, and so on. And then it's meeting the spiritual principle, and it's going to produce the mandala. That might be a way to look at it.
Yeah, he says when he kills that child, that's when all that darkness is. He has to come to terms with it then. The primordial powers are set loose, and he has to somehow come to terms with them.
Yeah.
So those would be all the things that is all the things that are missing in a soul that only lives its spiritual life.
Exactly. Yet, when it comes up as one heck of a problem. But it can't be excluded because of it. I'm thinking out loud here, so.
So are you saying that this black rush of stuff comes up, and then this part here is
this part
the spiritual part?
Yeah, this
part. And then it, oh.
This part and this part start fighting each other, and this is the result.
And it say this part. Is that part?
Yeah, this part.
This part and this part.
Because of what Carol said, which I think is right, this is Christianity coming on the scene.
Okay.
So all this, and then, oops, what about this? That's the spirit. Okay. This is pure nature.
And would you get the line? Thank you.
So nature is below, spirit is in that mess up here?
Well, there is a spirit in nature.
Right.
And I think that's what's so confusing, because it, on the one hand, it is nature, but it has a meaning. But the way it's experienced for somebody who has lifted off the Christian superego is just an uprush of power and sex and everything.
My friend Bruce Jones, who you met, talked about those gold flecks in the darkness being reminiscent of the alchemical idea of the gold in the feces and the blackness, which I thought was a good phrase.
But without this, this is never going to come to fruition. If there's only this, there's no fruition. That's what we've had for 1,000 years. And so Europe, Freud, etc., says, oh, well, this is the real thing. And so, and Jung is saying, okay, I understand what you're saying, Freud. I'm letting it all come up. But all that comes up is another mess. As soon as you live instinct, you don't get solution, you get conflict. That's what Freud, I don't think, understood. Instinct is dual.
So then, could you go to the next one and compare that and show this?
Yeah, so here's the fish. Right. That's Christianity. It hasn't, it's a pale presence. Mm-hmm. That's the new form of the fish, the Trinitarian presence, which works on or will work on the Massa Confusa, and the self will be born between the two.
What do you call a mess of confusion?
All this stuff.
Everything down there.
Yeah.
Including the mandala.
Yeah.
And the mandala still is representing that.
It is, in a way, an advance over this, but it's still not yet moral.
It's still trying to organize itself.
Right. And it needs another principle to do that.
So where does the sun come in?
Well, that's part of this stuff.
The star is kind of a sun.
Your star or
that's
sun.
That's just transformed.
That's,
right?
No.
We have the two stars and then we have the two suns. Those were separate.
What do you mean?
Well, we'll get to it.
Okay. No, this is the fish.
Got that.
This is all the other stuff.
Right.
This is something that's going to be born.
Okay.
That's the tree. That's the mandala. That's the self. I think.
This weekend.
So then, it looks like the Christian stuff then has. Look at the difference. And this now has taken on a life of its own. I think these will be what become the runes.
the men ones take on a life of itself.
Yeah. He is separate from.
So now we're starting to get the two stars. That star is starting to form in the center of the mandala, and then we have
yeah.
the star up above. It was a, I thought, I conceived of those to explain to myself as the star of the self and then the star of the individual soul.
That works.
And what are those stars? Well, one is beginning to form in the center of the mandala. And the other is up above.
Okay.
And then the volcano becomes abstracted.
Okay.
Which I take as a translation into thought.
Into?
Thought. Or human.
Human identity?
Humanizing it somehow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's part of the mess of confusion has been pushed into that.
Oh, it's been transformed. So the mass of confusion has that in it. But it's only when consciousness intercepts it that it can manifest.
Then those red flowers appear again.
Uh-huh.
That's a motif that comes in there.
Would it make any sense that all the blue lines represent the unconscious?
Maybe. I wondered if it was destiny. Let's see. I don't know. I think anybody's opinion is as good as anybody else's here. I say that because destiny is sometimes represented as the to and fro of a snake. Because, you know, living your destined life isn't a straight line. Yeah.
Yeah, what was that from the dream seminar that he had to work on his wave?
Right.
I can't remember.
Yeah, the guy saw I think it was a stream of history as a stream of stripes.
Mm-hmm.
Undulating stripes. And his was one teensy little piece in that stripe, in that collection of stripes. So he was working on his stripe in the sea of many stripes flowing, which was the stream of history. And he didn't say, "Oh, my stripe is too small. Why even bother?" He thought it was important to work on his stripe.
Who's he?
The Nalazan.
This is from the dream seminar.
Oh.
It's a dream Jung was interpreting of a guy, of the guy who he. And the guy was kind of a cynic to start with. And Jung was showing how the unconscious shows life as a stream of individuals. And you can easily say, so what's it matter if there's one stream less of billions? But in the dream, that didn't register for the guy. What the guy was focusing on was his stripe.
Marion Woodman says in her forward in her book about having cancer and her struggle with that, something I really love, that she said what she learned from cancer was the difference between fate and destiny.
Mm-hmm.
That fate is what we owe to nature, but destiny is what we owe to the soul.
Hmm. That is 80.
Yeah,
88.
Now that center star is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that volcano is kind of an altar now.
Right.
Say that again, Carol.
I say the volcano is, it seems to be a kind of altar now with the menorah on it.
So that's, I mean, that's, see, there's so much of Jungian psychology embedded in these pictures, which hadn't yet been expressed, that massa confusa on one hand is a huge problem, but it's also the way to the birth of this, to the self. And when you can pull that off, you realize the sacredness of what seemed like instinctual chaos.
That red piece on the menorah reminds me of the red gem in the cave,
mm-hmm.
early on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's
before
the same.
Before he goes down to the death of Siegfried,
mm-hmm.
where he finds the gem stone. Kind of similar in shape, I think.
Yeah. So it's going to become the red tablets of the runes.
Mm-hmm. Ah, right. Mm-hmm. So the red thing represents the self.
Here?
Yeah. The beginning of the
Well, what you said, Carol, leads me to say then, whatever the runes manifest, or whatever the I Ching manifests, that's what that red thing is. That there is a kind of a will beyond us working. I guess you could call it the will of God, you could call it the destiny of the world, you could call it your own personal destiny, but it's not the same as instinct, although it's tied to instinct.
Could I give a short example from a dream?
Let's see.
Okay, yes, that'll be it. This is probably 20 years ago that I had this dream that had to do with, it was a Barbie doll, and it turned into a little teeny baby,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of disappeared, and I put it in a bassinet to keep it safe, and when I went back and looked, it was in a Dutch oven, in an oven, and it had cooked, and all the flesh was falling off, and you could see the eyes, and it was awful. And then there was this voice that came, that even now, they said, "I will always love you." And it felt like that kind of a message of what you're saying.
Yeah, you could say, it may sound strange, but it's the love experience in a synchronicity. That you think, geez, something is looking after me. Okay.
I wanted to ask about that. At the top, you said the Trinitarian God.
Yeah. Or the Spirit.
The Spirit. Several drawings ago, it was it's the other way. I've been noticing, and it has become inverted.
It's yeah.
The opposite. And I don't know what that is, any comments, but the thought that came through my mind is that his changing feelings about his spiritual life and Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
That's
certainly possible. Yeah. And what I see here is this and this are working on each other.
I'm sorry, what was the second thing?
This and then this.
Okay.
Are working on, this is the right-hand side of my chart, and this is the left-hand side of my chart, and this is the result. This is all those things I listed between two.
Okay.
That's how I understand it at the moment.
So the energy of the conflict?
This is the energy of the conflict.
Which could be the lines as well in the background. Energy.
Yeah, I
the energy from
I think
the
you can probably say just about anything about those lines. I go with the dream in dream analysis seminar. That is the movement of history, which is more than just what people do. It's the forces that carry us.
So what
are the forces that carry us? What are you pointing
to? These lines.
The blue lines.
Yeah. You might say the archetypal background of history. Yeah, this would be the Trinity. This is the manifestation of transcendent function.
Well, but there's more gold lines at the top. It's like those
here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was afraid somebody was going to say that.
Oh.
No, go ahead, take a shot at it.
Well, the transforming function of the three top lines.
Could be.
It's like they're pulling out.
Yeah.
Part of the divine from that.
Could very well be. Yeah.
Or being sucked in.
Well, because they do become inverted, those lines, like Patty said.
What number is this image?
88, I think.
Mm-hmm. 88.
When it was flipped up the other way, I saw it as like Ra, the sun god's boat that he goes around. Mm-hmm. And then it flips over and becomes Kurdistan and a ceiling. The rest of it.
I think that fits.
It flips over and becomes like a ceiling. So I saw it as the switch from, at some point, the sun god to Christianity. But,
There's also a parallel between that menorah or whatever it is at the bottom, the gold things, and the ones up on the top, which are
mm-hmm. This is 89, I think.
Emphasis being put on that blue star reappearing.
Mm-hmm. The big one in the middle, you mean?
No.
Oh.
The one up top.
Up top.
And that shape underneath it reminds me of the flame tree in the previous painting. The flame tree.
Where he was kneeling before?
Yeah, the flame tree was the ability to obtain the middle way.
Mm-hmm.
And if that upper star is, you know, the soul, it looks like that middle way is going to welcome it down there. Or is providing a path to that center.
Mm-hmm. In the footnote, he talks about the hieroglyphs, but I can't make any sense out of that. So. I'm going to let that be, unless you guys see something.
And there's the tablet. That orange cone has become the tablet.
Right.
Then the mountain has turned into two black hemispheres.
Mm-hmm.
something now.
Yes. Uh-huh.
If you follow the color.
Right.
And then that inner star has transformed to, with a gold center.
And a black.
Mm-hmm. And there's some sort of interaction taking place with the golden black particles and then the tablet.
Like there's an exchange between mm-hmm. that tablet and the star, the way I kind of envisioned mm-hmm. it. And because of that exchange, you're getting this gold bursting forth up top. Just my imagination.
And the tablet has sort of replaced the fourth, I mean, there were those red things, red designs.
Yeah, one of the flowers, and the one of the four flowers is gone.
And
now
gone.
Yeah. I got the,
the idea that the bottom one went into the top and then came out is that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then this is kind of like the fallout, and I have no idea what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Or did it come up from
yeah,
the rooms?
Yeah, I'm seeing it as an exchange between the star and whatever this symbolic language is down here, which I felt was like a personal language to him.
Yeah.
I think it's more because the runes were an oracle.
But these are his runes. Because if you look at the rune, because I've printed.
Could you identify him?
No.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see what you're saying. These are the runes he made up.
Well, he talks about them as hieroglyphics in one point, and he talks about them as the runes in another point. And I printed off two different kinds of runes, and I couldn't make...
You couldn't make heads or tails. I couldn't see it either.
Those are definitely the runes that the unconscious has presented to him.
Mm-hmm. 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 They're his runes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Symbolic glyphs of
right.
meaning.
Are runes supposed to be like letters?
Yeah, they're originally the
there's all kinds of
Teutonic alphabet, but they were also picked out apparently as an oracle. They would put them on. You can even buy them at these spiritual stores. You know, they're a bag with little blocks with letters on. You pick them out and you read them. Like I don't know how you read them, but.
You have to look up.
Yeah. Look them up in a book. Yeah. See, that's synchronicity. An oracle is a reverse synchronicity. You, in a synchronicity, matter presents a meaning to you, and in an oracle, you ask the matter to present a meaning.
And what was the first one?
You asked the matter to present them.
A synchronicity is when matter just presents a meaning. And in an oracle, you ask matter to present a meaning.
Okay.
You say coins. Form a pattern that communicates to me, or runes, you know, let me pick the one that's meaningful to me.
But they're both matter. The synchronicity...
Yeah, they're all matter.
Yeah.
I guess maybe a better way to say it is, in one, it's spontaneous, in the other, you make an inquiry.
Okay.
Well, you know, where you can see link between emotion and whatever is being read is, I can tell you, the I Ching is more accurate if you're suffering over the issue. If you just play with it, forget it. I've seen that many times. So it's spirit, we would say, but the spirit and emotion are connected. That's why it's so, well, I wouldn't say dangerous, but you're really defeating yourself every time you, well, shall I have steak tonight or fish? you know, if that's what you throw it on, pretty soon it'll just ignore you. It's amazing.
When we were talking about the black and gold, $1.
In the center?
Up on the corners of each of the points.
Down.
The black and gold, right?
Yeah.
Were we talking about that being confusion in previous images? I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
I think we were. And it seems like it's diminished so much in this, and it's getting more organized in this. If you look at the wavy lines that we were saying, there were all kinds of things we were saying, but destiny, what have you, that what to me it says not being buffeted about so much, that there's more now forming there, that there's less confusion.
They're like pins of stability.
Yeah, it almost seems like now they're interacting with that self-image and becoming part of it. Even though they're in the background, you can see in the very top wave, it seems to be part of that formation. Mm-hmm. So where you interact in time and space with your historical period, perhaps,
which one of this 90?
Image 90,
Could I say one more thing about 89?
Yep.
When this goes up, when the one on the bottom goes up into this, the question I had was, what happens? Will these two eventually blend into one?
I think so.
Okay. So all four will end up as one.
Yep.
Four to one. There we go. Okay. Because I think it happened, but I couldn't interpret it as well. Okay. Thank you.
Something's really condensed.
To me, it looks like the star in the center now has become a world. And I see a stylized tree here, and roots, the roots and the a very stylized tree,
which you'll see even more in 92.
Yeah, so that's the tree I think that we got coming.
Are you talking just about the blue?
Yeah.
Blue and the gold as well.
And the gold. It's like an exchange of energy going on from above and below or something.
Yeah.
In that footnote, he talks about the inner firmament. And here we get that first glimpse of what Kathy described as the blue globe.
Where is that?
Where does he speak? In the footnote, I think he speaks of...
Which footnote, though?
I didn't tell myself.
Okay, because 89 is 155, right?
Correct.
And then it seemed like it contained more than that. It had to contain 90. I couldn't find it. And then also 92 and 93, so 91 is over that.
I think it's what finally becomes, that blue finally becomes the inner firmament in image 105, I think. I can't remember if he speaks of it as the firmament before that or not.
Could you give a definition of the Finis Mundus? Because that world is like the image before. We have those waves now participating with the self-image that's coming up. And it just popped into my head, what is the one world?
Well,
is that where you are living in time and space with your creative task?
And in the spot that you're supposed to be living in.
Okay.
I think an easier way to think of it is when you have a synchronistic moment, your inner world and the outer world are the same.
Okay.
You have a dream of something, and then that dream occurs in the outer world. And that's synchronicity.
Okay.
So the inner and outer is one world. When this is one world.
Okay.
I think you could extend that to say that there is, when there is a reciprocity between your inner process and your role in the world, that's another aspect of it. The original idea of the alchemist is when you made the gold in the vessel, there would be a corresponding piece of gold made in the outer world. We would say synchronistically. So that the opus just didn't transform the matter in the vessel, it transformed life outside as well.
Which of the two is the gold of the spirit? The one outside or the one in the vessel?
Well, this is where Jung would say we're asking the wrong question. It's the same. And the error is we want to cut inner and outer. But that is not the true nature of reality. That's thanks to Mr. Descartes.
So the alchemists themselves were falling into this error. If you're
yeah, but also healing it because they thought at certain moments there was a correspondence.
Okay.
So is that maybe what the talk about the cones and being up and up?
I think so, yeah. Well, that he's fumbling trying to express this.
There's two black hemispheres are starting to crawl up that tablet now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then pretty soon they're going to form that roof that he mentions in the footnote. I assume that's what he's talking about when he talks about.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out where the roof was either.
The roof.
Where is that?
I think it's in footnote 155.
Right? Yeah, it's all in
155. Everything's okay.
I just threw up my hands.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's such a stream of consciousness that only a mother could love.
Yeah.
What did you just say about something about there were no words for what he was going through or something? What did you say? Shoot. Anyway, I was wondering, that made me think of the runes at the bottom. There are not as many runes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's almost as if maybe some of that meaning has been incorporated.
That's exactly what I thought. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like we were talking about in class with the projection, that's a process, and the process never stops, but mm-hmm. what you do is integrate the content. It's mm-hmm. as if he's integrating
right.
the content
mm-hmm.
exactly. of this mm-hmm. into that. The self-image in the center.
That's pretty cool.
The blue what we were calling the tree is the same blue color that was in the wavy lines in the previous images. If you looked at that as destiny, it's almost like you incorporated
mm-hmm.
this destiny into this work.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah. Well, should we stretch?